The following episode of Fathermore is featuring a good friend of mine, Eddie Ift. Eddie's a comedian, and he has been all over the world. And he is a great, great guy. He's very, very fun to talk to. We've had a podcast together a while back called the Wadcast Podcast to cover like across the world and stuff. So you may know him from there. You may know him from other stuff that he's done. But either way, Eddie and his wife have two kids. And it was just a lot of fun to get a chance to talk to him because the dad, Eddie Ift, the husband, Eddie Ift, was a very, very different human being before he became a husband, before he became a dad. The type of lifestyle that he led before all that stuff happened and before, you know, this is where he ended up and how he got here. That was really interesting to kind of examine those differences and see where he's at now and how he sort of involves his kids in his hobbies, in his life, in his profession, and a lot of his material these days is about his kids. So overall, it was a really great conversation. I enjoyed talking to him. I like talking to Eddie in general, so it was really good. And I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Take care.
How are you, dude?
Good.
Doing okay? You look tired.
I'm at 3 hours sleep.
Yeah. Can I use that video? Can I put that video at the beginning of this?
Sure.
Chris, what are you doing to me?
Hey, Chris, I want to show you something.
Why not the? Why not use the one of my son just screaming in the middle of the soccer field?
I'll use that too. I'm very curious now. What is the context of that? Because this video, he's just losing his mind. Like legit losing his mind, just screaming as hard as I've ever seen a child scream.
Yeah.
And I cannot understand what could have caused him to do that. What is it? What happened? What happened, Eddie?
Bad parenting.
Get out of here, dude. Get out of here.
I think it's a lack of words. He doesn't have the communication skills to say, fuck you, dad. Fuck you, dad. That was at soccer practice or soccer game for my daughter.
Okay.
And when you have two children, I mean, this is just in my experience because I don't know, because some people probably do it way better than us. We've noticed that our first daughter got all the attention in the world. And then the second kid doesn't get as much attention. And it's hard to take the attention away from the first kid because she's such a better kid. You know, you just want to shower her. Now, it's like you don't realize that the first one still wants all the attention that they used to get.
Yeah.
And so you do it a lot because they demand it. And the second one's like, hey, I'm over here. And doesn't know how to use their words. So they're screaming like, why are we at her soccer game? Where's my game?
Oh, man.
Yeah. So like, we'll be at her soccer game. And he's like, what about me? Why am I sitting on the sidelines? Well, because you're two. You don't know how to kick a ball. And if you get hit in the face with one, you'll probably die.
So I've actually... I've thought about this because quite a few people I've talked to have multiple kids, and the vibe that I get is exactly what you're describing, which is when it's just, you know, you and the first kid, you can overdo it, but you can put a ton of effort and energy and time into interacting with them and getting to know them. And that's why it's like we boil everything that needs to be cleaned, and you know, we hush them to sleep every night while singing their favorite song, and we carry them around everywhere because they don't want to be put down or whatever, right? There's like a lot of attention because there's just so much bandwidth for it. And the moment a second child enters the fray, it's like you actually cannot do those things the same way you did with the first kid, because now you have a 2, 3, 4 year old and an infant. And
I think it's a lot like driving cars. You can really only drive one. If you try to drive two, you're going to crash.
is that a bit from your show? Cause if not, that's solid.
I just thought of it right now. And yeah. And I heard from everybody. One's easy. Two are really tough. And then three is impossible. And I saw, this is funny, the other day, my wife and I were down in the Country Mart and we saw a schizophrenic, like homeless guy, like just going berserk on the side of the street. And Lauren goes, oh, that poor guy. She's like, wonder what happened to him. And I go, third kid. I honestly looked at that guy and I was like, that's me. That's me. If she would say I'm pregnant, I'd just be down there like, potato, you know, like just losing my mind. I think it would put me over the edge.
So
nobody ever asks like homeless, crazy people what happened. But I think because you never go up to them like, hey, excuse me, I was just wondering why you're sitting there peeing on yourself on the floor of, you know, like just on the sidewalk on the Venice boardwalk. Why is that happening? And because people were just like, oh, walk around them, you know, like, oh, watch out. No one ever says what happened. But that guy might say third kid. Like it happened. Or fourth or fifth. But I have a theory. After you go past three, and I don't know, I was one of five kids, but I think once you go past three, it gets easy, because I think you stop giving a fuck and you're just like, hey, if one dies, we've got like a bunch more. And like, you start going, hey, these ones will take care of these ones. Like, I always hear these stories. Like my oldest sister says she raised me. She's like, oh yeah, mom was just so busy all the time that I was the one raising you. And
So I'm one of three, and my parents are both like one of like seven on my dad's side and like six on my mom's side. But I feel like that's also a generational thing. Our generation isn't having multiple kids.
No,
we're not having like fours and fives. Well, not on purpose.
Rich people aren't. Poor people, poor uneducated people do it all the time.
And what you're describing is like it's like the most challenging thing in the world. We have way more bandwidth than,
because we have way more money to do fun shit, and they don't have a lot of money, so their fun is let's see what a baby will do. And they're like, let's pop out a baby, this will be fun. And oh, that's over, let's do it again. And there's also a lot like a lack of education, which, you know, when you get educated, they're like, hey, smart people, kids are fucking hard. Like, if you want to raise a good kid, it's a shitload of work. And so you're like, ooh, I better rethink this idea. Where dumb people are like, oh, another kid. Mountain Dew. You know, like
Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
All right. So you're raising good kids. Obviously you got two of them.
I wouldn't say that. I think it's the hardest thing in the world. And like, it's almost like you can, I don't know. I always heard you can just get like a dud, you know, like you work really hard and the kid comes out just a piece of shit. I think the percentages are with you if you're a good parent, but you still could end up with that. I think my parents were really good parents. And look at this fucking asshole.
How did you and Lauren know that you guys wanted a kid or kids, or did you just kind of like stumble into this?
For a long period of my life, I didn't want any kids. I was running around like a fucking madman around the world. And I loved my life that I had zero responsibility, zero accountability. And I could like date a girl. And if she started to give me the least bit of problems, I was like, oh, you know what? I don't need to take your shit. And I would just leave. And there was another one the next night. So it was really fun for a while. But at a certain point, it caught up with me where I started getting panic attacks, really bad panic attacks. And my sister said she had got them at a point in her life. And she was like, it was my body basically telling me something was wrong. And she was a very like high powered executive flying all over the country. She goes, I was in a hotel room in Chicago and I just like walked out of the room, got on an early flight and went home and quit my job. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, I just decided like it was over. I couldn't do this anymore. And she started having kids and settled down and did all this stuff. And she was like, it just wasn't for me anymore. I think she might have had a kid at that point also. And she was just like, I couldn't do it anymore. Like do the mother and travel. And and I just couldn't figure out what it was for me. And then I just figured out it was a pretty empty life. You know, like I had no roots, no, like I was coming home to a dog and I loved my dog, but it was like, this is just bullshit. You know, like I need to lay roots and do something. And I met Lauren and I knew right away when I met Lauren that she was like the one. I knew like the minute, like the first time I hung out with her, I was like, wow, this is weird. I met my wife. And I was like, this is, cause I used to date a crazy stripper. And,
and that's like the exact opposite.
Yes. And she was, I mean, my wife's beautiful, but this girl was really beautiful too. And she was like, but she was like slutty hot. And I remember it was really funny. Like she was in Playboy and all my friends used to laugh. They're like, how's that stripper you're dating? And I was like, oh, it's fun. You know, did you ever get your, ever get your car keyed? You know?
Yeah, that sounds like really the path to fulfillment, you know. Yeah.
You ever wake up to go get coffee and your wallet's gone? I remember one of my friends who's an idiot, who's like the craziest guy I knew, said to me one day, he's like, Ift, yeah, it's real funny and everything, you dating that stripper, but you know what's gonna happen? You're gonna get her pregnant and she's gonna have the kid. And she's going to be a shitty mom and you're going to resent her and it's going to be a giant fuck up and your whole life's going to fall apart. He's like, so the quicker you end this, the better. And I was like, what? And he was like, what are you doing? And I thought about it for a minute and he's like, I'm telling you. And he was a crazy man. So I was like, wow, if he's telling me this.
Is that the best piece of advice you've ever gotten?
Yeah, he's a friend that's really good with advice like that because he's not talking from like a, you know, an ivory tower or anything. He's like, he's been there in the trenches. He's done it all. And he's like, look, dude, I'm just using common sense here. We both know how this is going to end. And I don't know. Then I met Lauren and she just, you know, I was like, she'll be like the best mom in the world. And I just like thought like, I've done so much shit. Like I've traveled all over the world, like literally almost every continent. I've got enough notches in my headboard. And I was kind of like, yeah, I was out surfing one day and I saw a dad pushing his little son. It's so funny. I'm pretty sure the guy I saw was down in Huntington Beach. I'm pretty sure it was Kanoa Igarashi, who's one of the top surfers in the world right now, like top, I think he's number four in the world or five. And I saw him when he was like 7 years old or whatever. And his dad was pushing him into waves and this kid was like ripping. And I was like, I think I'd rather be doing that than here alone surfing. I'd rather have like pushing my kid. And like I've done enough for me. It's time to like teach someone else. So I blew it in my wife.
Awesome. Successfully.
Yeah, it took a while. Because
a lot of people bloat in their wives all the time. They're just, people are ripping loads left and right, and it's not always working out to end up being a baby, much less, you know, decent kids.
Yeah, it was, we had it rough. We had a miscarriage in between, and that was tough, but, so I got it past the goalie three times.
We, so Katie and I were trying to have a baby for years, and we actually had two lost pregnancies relatively early on. Yeah. I mean, it happens, obviously. It's very common. It's very, very common. We were on the verge of starting IVF process. Like, we had met with the doctors. We had started, you know, that entire like appointment process. We'd both gotten tested. We were actually going to start Katie on like whatever medication she needed to start on to like prepare herself for like, that process, the harvesting eggs and whatever. And that day we found out we were pregnant, and we're like, okay, let's see if this sticks.
Saved you 100 G's.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And we had a really great pregnancy, knock on wood. We have a very healthy, wonderful baby. So we kind of like, I think, I don't know what it was, at that moment, but you know, the timing just worked out in our favor. And I think it's really unfortunate that, you know, the miscarriage thing is really challenging for everybody involved. It's like, it's impossibly challenging for the mom. It's incredibly challenging for the dad. It's very straining on the relationship. And I feel like it just never gets talked about. Like, it's just like this thing that happens to a ton of people.
Yeah.
Everyone is just like, shame. And it's like, why? I don't understand that, you know?
Yeah. Ours was particularly rough because it was at 17 weeks.
Yeah.
So we had already had a gender reveal party. So there was, like a strong association to it. I mean, we were very lucky to have a baby after that. And, but I have a friend over in Australia that had a stillborn.
Oh God.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. Like,
that's a nightmare.
Awful. Or somebody losing a child. I hate to even talk about it or discuss it because it's just like the most depressing thing to think about, or a sick child, or, you know, the challenge people have with like children with the, you know, disabilities and things like that. It's just like, I feel very grateful and very fortunate. When I joke, you know, it's funny, I joke on stage and say things like my kid's an asshole or this or that, and I can't love them any more than I do. I mean, I love them so much. I just dropped them off at prison, and it's cool. And I was like, I like didn't want to leave them. I was so sad.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky and grateful to have what I have. But it's also the scariest feeling in the world, because you're like, if something happens to them, I don't know if I could like exist any longer. I'll be that guy in the parking lot, you know, the schizophrenic guy.
Yeah.
So they become like, you know, the most important thing in the world. Like, I would sell my wife into slavery to make sure my kids are okay. I know she's in the other room right now, and I'm just
like, you want her to like overhear you say
I feel like she's listening to me, and she's gonna give me shit about this whole show.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. So, great.
So I'm just
trying. I wonder, you know, so like, you guys, you know, you had this like epiphany, you had like this moment, you were like, you know what, F, like my life is empty and meaningless, and it's not really getting me the things that I know deep down inside I want. You know, you met Lauren, you guys got married, you guys got pregnant. How did you prepare to have a child? Or did you, or were you just like, you know what, I have 8 months to like have one last bender, and hopefully this, like, you know, this works out.
I was so over partying and everything by the time I got married. Even I remember my bachelor party, I had two, and I had one with like all the guys that worked on Talking Shit podcast and fans.
Oh no.
And then I had one with like my friends that I grew up with and, you know, my closest friends. And both of them, I was like, oh, do I have to do this? And I just felt like because of my history, I was obligated.
Oh no.
But literally after like night one of like, you know, 3 days of whatever it was, I was like, can we all just go home? Like, I'm so tired and exhausted and hungover, and this is terrible. This would have been great. Like, my bachelor party, if it had been in like my 20s or early 30s, I would have been in jail. I went to jail at my best friend's bachelor party. You know, like, I would have been in jail. And I was so like, they're like, what do you want to do? I'm like, do you want to sit by the pool? And like, no, I mean, we did the whole, you know, the whole nine yards, but I almost felt like it was contrived. Like, I was like, all right, we got to stay here another hour. And, you know, so we can say we did it. So when it came to like parenting, I was pretty ready. We got a doula, even though we didn't do the natural, like, didn't you do the weird, like in your house?
We
like,
tried, we tried actually. Cool. So we were going to do we had a pair of midwives and a doula, and the goal was to do an at-home birth. And then the our son just kept going past gestational age. He was like, it was like we hit 40 weeks and no movement. Not like no movement, like he's fine, but like no labor, right? Hit 40 weeks, no labor. Hit like 40 and a half weeks, no labor. Hit 41 weeks, no labor. Wow. And it's like, she wasn't even dilating. She wasn't feeling any labor contractions. She wasn't dilating. Everything was healthy. Everything was okay. Baby just did. He was like a mama's boy right from the get. He just did not want to leave. He was like, I'm comfortable and we're sticking around. So we hit 41 and three, and we went in for an induction, and he was born 41 and four. So he was born at a hospital, but we had already sort of planned that into our contingencies. So our midwives had hospital privileges. We just went to Cedars-Sinai where they had privileges, and we had the exact, like the best and closest thing to the birth that we wanted to have in the hospital. It obviously was very different, but it was successful and
everything went well. So it was not a C-section.
We were very, very aggressively planning everything we could towards having a vaginal birth.
So ours was the complete opposite. My wife was too posh to push. She was like, I'm going in. I want them to, you know, give me a shot and cut it open and take it out. And I watched the whole thing. It was like watching Total Recall, watching this like thing come out of her stomach. And I was like, bleh! And she's like, how's it look? I'm like, oh, you don't want to look at this thing. And then, the second one, you know, they have to do a C-section again. And I don't know why they don't just put a zipper in there. I really think they should stow a zipper in. And then the second time they just go, oh, here it comes. And then they're like, we'll zip you back out.
Like, in case you ever want to do another one. And you're like, I'll blow my brains out.
Yeah. But then she'd be like, hey, I'm coming in to have my zipper taken out. And, you know, it's, I think that years from now, they'll probably have something like that. Like, oh, we're going to unsnap this and pull the baby out and then close it back up. Yeah. It was, we were prepared. We got a doula. Mm-hmm. Out of recommendation, even though we weren't doing natural childbirth. And it was like, we didn't have any family here, none. So no one to help us or tell us or prep us. We were just, and none of our friends, we now have like a big group of like friends, because like we live in a family neighborhood and we're all, the kids are friends, all the parents are friends. But at that time we had just moved into our house.
Yeah.
In a new neighborhood. So we had, my only friend was the guy, you know, Serge Tonkia.
Yeah.
From of a down, another fellow Armenian.
We're all on the same text group anyway.
I would assume. So I've been telling the people from Azerbaijan that too.
It's not funny.
Okay. I thought it was. They were having a child almost the same time, I think a few months before us. And they were like, oh, you got to get our doula. Our doula will help you. So we went to this woman And she basically coached us through and told us everything to do.
Okay.
From everything from how you're going to feed the baby to how you're going to breastfeed to how you're going to, you know, do this to how you're going to put the car seat in to how it was like having a consultant. And it was good on a lot of things. It was bad because she like went overboard to like justify her existence.
Sure.
And so she made everything a little like high stress. Like
that's the opposite of what you want.
Yeah. Like you need to do this. You need, so it made breastfeeding really difficult. I mean, for me, but she did make it like, okay, the baby's going to get up like four times a night or whatever. Dad, you have to get up and you have to prepare and do this and do this and do this. Then you hand the baby off to mom. Mom will feed, you go back to sleep. Then you get back up for the next. So I was waking every time the baby was waking. And it was like, hey, like with the second kid, I was like, I'm not needed for this.
Oh, come on, dude. Are you serious? Wait a second. So you're telling me on your first, your daughter was born and you were like, I'm in it with you. Let's do this. Lady told me I have to do this. Yeah. I'm going to do this thing. And then your son was born and you're like,
I don't think you
don't need me here.
Yeah. And I'm telling you that. And you know what? It worked out better with the second one, because then like during the day when my wife was cracking, I was able to take over.
Oh, and interesting.
I had a solid night of sleep, not solid, but like decent night of sleep. And I was like, I can take over. Whereas with the first kid, we were both like, we looked like a couple meth heads on like, you know, a 4-day bender. We're like, what are you doing? I don't know. By the way, two miniature horses just ran by my front of my house right now. Not ponies, miniature
horses. Nice.
Two of them being pulled by a golf cart, not pulling a golf cart, being like run. My dogs are barking at the miniature, as they should. Who has miniature horses?
Who exercises miniature horses by driving around in their golf cart?
My neighbors. And look at the dogs. They're like, what are you doing with those weird horses? If you call them ponies, they will reprimand you. They're not ponies. They're miniature horses.
They paid extra for them to be miniature horses.
They're therapy horses.
Nah, that's not a real thing.
I swear to God.
What is a therapy horse? This is a fatherhood podcast, but I'm very curious what a therapy horse is.
You're very stressed out and you need some therapy, you can pet a miniature horse.
You live in a really special neighborhood, dude.
In Alabama.
Yeah, apparently.
It's like nowhere else in the whole world. We have a pig and a turkey that live together.
You do?
No, one of my neighbors.
Okay.
He's a famous musician, not Serge. I guess I can say who he is. He's, you know, I'm sexy and I know it.
Okay.
And he's got a turkey and a pig.
That's pretty cool.
And the whole neighborhood goes to see them every day. And they live together in harmony, these two. And people feed them bananas.
I have a neighbor who has a pair of tortoises.
Yeah, we got
Reggie and Wallace.
We got a lot of tortoises in the neighborhood.
And they live in the front yard. And
do they escape?
No. They have escaped, I think, but that was before we moved in.
There's always a loose tortoise in our neighborhood. Somebody's like, there's a giant tortoise, and some of them are gigantic. Dude.
Yeah, they're like boulders walking around. Like, what are you doing?
When I was in Adelaide, Australia doing a show, after the show, this guy came up to me. He's like, I asked him, I said, where do you work? And he's like, LA. I said, what fire department? He told me the number. And I'm like, that's my neighborhood. And he's like, shut up. And I'm like, how weird is that you work at the fire station in my neighborhood? He goes, as soon as I saw it, he goes, dude, you have a lot of snakes in your neighborhood. I go, yeah, I know. He goes, you know, like,
he goes, did you go to the snake charmer guy?
He goes, there's always like one big fire. He goes, but all we do all day long is we get calls to go pick up rattlesnakes. And I go, yeah. And then he goes, we got a python once. And what? I go, there's not pythons in my neighborhood. He goes, there was. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. He goes, we had to come take out like a 10-foot python. And I'm like, where? And he goes, behind somebody's house. And I'm like, somebody let that out of their house.
Yeah.
And
that's a pet. That was a former pet.
We just had a kid attacked by a mountain lion about 3 weeks ago.
What does that mean, kid attacked by? Are they okay? What happened?
Four-year-old kid was playing in his backyard a half a mile from my house, and mountain lion, I don't know if it jumped the fence or what it did, but it was an adolescent mountain lion. I think it was about a year old, but they're still huge.
Yeah, they're big.
And it started attacking the kid, and the mother of the kid came out and just started punching the mountain lion.
Hell yes.
Beat the mountain lion off the kid. The kid had a huge scar here, a big scratch on the face. The kid's going to be okay. I mean, other than it's going to have the greatest story to tell girls in a bar. Oh, you see and that? I fought a mountain lion.
Hyper traumatic experience as a child.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope that he'll get over that and won't, like, that it won't affect him. I think it will probably somewhere, but he's alive, thank God. And, it's scary because, you know, like, they can be at middle of the daytime. I've seen one. There's a tree right beside me. I saw one way up in the tree one day. I was like, I go to Lauren, I go, come here, look, is that? And she's like, oh my God.
And I'm like, because at first you look at them and you're like, that just looks like a kind of a big cat. Like, that's a really big house cat. Why did it get there? And you're like, no, that cat weighs 90 pounds. That's a giant cat. 90, that doesn't sound right.
90, if I'm correct, I think they're up to like 200 and
something. Are they really?
Oh, they're huge.
Wow.
Maybe I mean, they're like twice the size of a coyote. And coyote, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they get up to like 200. Anyway, so my neighbor next door is like, I saw it in this tree. She goes, oh yeah, I see the paw prints on the top of my car all the time. And the roof right here. And I was like, oh, so you think about it. It's like, there's oftentimes, my daughter's six, my kids too. There's oftentimes they're outside playing around alone. And now it's like, I got to think about that. I got to think about punching a mountain lion.
So like, I feel like, you know, there's an escalating number of and frequency of, and even like, you know, how aggressive it is of things to worry about, like things that are just on your mind about the kids all the time. Mm-hmm. Does that ever hit a peak and then like valley out a little bit, or maybe even just plateau? Because like, you know, my son's only 2.5 months. He's not even 3 months. And I have a lot of, I'm not going to say anxiety, but I have a lot of concerns about things that I need to be responsible for. And especially as he starts, like, you know, he's still in the phase where I could leave him somewhere and be like, you'll be there when I get back, because you physically cannot move.
Yeah, once they start moving, it's scary. That's a good question, because I think it changes often. There are times where I'm a helicopter parent, where I'm just all over my. And then there are times when people are like, do you know where your son is? And I'm like, oh yeah, he's over by that helicopter. You know, I'm a helicopter parent. I've seen him in like really dangerous situations that I'm like, ah, that was really bad. But then there are times when I'm like, am I being too precautious? And I see like friends who are like, you gotta just let them learn, you know, and they're like, phew. And definitely less cautious with the second one. But like, I'm gonna use a COVID analogy, like COVID. I have a buddy, we both know him, Hunter McIntyre, who has traveled all over the world unvaccinated and doesn't wear a mask and you know, does the most disgusting things and has not gotten COVID. I have a buddy, Kevin, from Kevin and Bean, who wore a mask, didn't leave his house, and got COVID twice.
The universe is a bitch, dude.
Yeah. So at a certain point, I do feel like when your number's up, your number's up. Like, there was a guy in 9/11 who was working at like Cantor Fitzgerald or something, or Windows on the World, and called in sick that day and didn't go to work. And then when that plane crash happened a week after 9/11, he was in that plane going on a, like, to Jamaica or wherever it was going. And it's like, I sometimes feel like that, like, you can like watch the shit out of your kid and then they end up with cancer or something, or you can eat. It is kind of like, but you know, because I know these parents that like don't fucking pay any attention, and their kids live long, healthy lives. And then there's, you know,
yeah.
So there's a balance, I think. I mean, you just don't do stupid shit.
But you've always kind of been a hypochondriac, right? It's like you always have functioned with like this like pretty high level of base anxiety around your health and well-being and the things that are happening around you. How are you even able to like turn that corner to let go of the outcomes when it comes to your kids? Because I feel like, wouldn't it make more sense that it got amplified?
Yeah, like, there's been, like, I'll never forget when I had a cold when Izzy was born and I didn't want to come home. I was like, I was so afraid of giving my cold to my daughter. I was like, oh my God, if my daughter gets sick and she's a baby, I can't handle her being sick. I can't see. And now, you know, I've seen the kids have cold and the kids don't give a fuck when they get a cold. Like, they shouldn't call people babies. They should call people adults.
That's another one. You gotta write this down. You're killing it with the material today.
My kid will have, I just made that up too. My kid will be sick and will be like running around, like phlegm coming out of their face. And they're just like, I want to go again, Dad. Let's go again. And you're like, no, you should lie in bed. And they're like,
you're so pale. You're vomiting everywhere. What is going on?
But still, every time you hear them cough, it sends like a shiver down your spine. You're just like, oh my God, it hurts you to hear your child. You never want to see your child. There's a certain amount of pain that you kind of enjoy. Like when you're like, stop it, stop it, stop it. And they pull it off the shelf and it hits them in your face. And you're like, ha ha, you know, like
learn the lesson.
Yeah, yeah. Learning lesson pain you enjoy.
Yeah.
My kid was like sprinting away from me yesterday and just did a full scorpion, like faced like over the back. And at first I laughed and I was like, cause he's usually pretty tough and he just gets right back up and like doesn't. And I heard the, and I went, he's so tough that I was like, oh, little guy. And I just ran to him because I knew, you start to know
which one's like a serious thing and which one's, yeah.
When shut up, come on, you're tougher than that.
Yeah.
And also like give him a hug. I always tell my wife, cause she's like, you can't be, they're little kid. And I'm like, I know when they deserve a hug. I know when they deserve to go shut up and keep going. You're tougher than this.
Do you have any memories of how you grew up with your siblings, with your parents, with your dad? And can you see a connection between those experiences and how you're raising your kids, either in like, oh, I'm going to do it this way, or you know what, I'm doing it the exact opposite of that?
I can't remember last week.
I'm so glad you said that, because I don't remember a lot of being, I like remember flashes of being a child up until like probably like 20, basically. I don't really remember a lot.
I have like, my memories of childhood are so acute, like such like a pinpointed thought or memory. And it has to be, And I'm not saying like, oh, I've lived this tremendous life, but I'm able to like apply memories to like places like, oh, remember when I was in Dubai, or remember when I was here, or remember when I was in Africa, or remember when. So when there's just like all that whole time at home, there's not a lot unless it's like, oh, I remember the time, you know, that those kids came over my house with a baseball bat to kill me. You know, like that's a memory you don't. But like my little brother was the first baby of the year. He was born on January 1st and he's 3 years younger than me. And he was on the news.
Cool.
And I remember that moment. That's my earliest moment of memory. I remember seeing him and being like, why the fuck's he on TV? And I'm not.
So that's where, where Cruz gets it from. Got it. So now things are becoming a little more clear.
But I don't remember much of parenting. I do remember relationships. I remember my mom and I, our relationship. And I remember my dad and I, our relationship. And my mom and I had this like, you know, she was the nicest, sweetest, anything I wanted, always there for me, never said no. You know, didn't baby me, but was always there for me. And my dad was really strict, disciplinarian, always felt like he was like I let him down, always felt like I didn't do enough or that I hadn't, you know, there was not a lot of accolades and a lot of like criticism. And I used to resent him for that. And once I had kids, I realized that my parents weren't functioning in unison. They were working against each other. And my dad was basically making up for how lenient my mom was. And I saw that with how my wife was acting with our first kid. Like she was just, it was the same thing as my mom. And then I had to put all the boundaries out and do all the discipline. And I was like, now I look like the bad guy. And I was like, this isn't fair to me. And I actually apologized to my dad. I was like, hey, you know, I thought you were a dick the whole time I was growing up. And now I realize you were compensating for mom actually letting me walk all over her and do whatever the fuck I wanted. And you had to stop that shit. And if you hadn't, I'd be in prison right now. So thanks. And I'm sorry. And he was like, yeah, fuck off.
Like, thanks dad, love you too, appreciate it.
Yeah, but I think parents should be on the same page. I think this like good cop bad cop thing doesn't work. I think you should both equally be like, you know, my best advice I got from parents, I got two bits of advice. One I thought was really good. One guy, a neighbor down the street, told me, he goes, the only advice I can give you on parenting is don't take anyone's advice.
I've heard that before, and I strongly support that.
And then another one I got was a lot of love, a lot of discipline. He goes, if you do just one of them, he goes, you do neither, you're going to really fuck them up, you know? And he goes, if you do just one, you're going to fuck them up. But if you do both, it'll all work out.
And I like that.
I do believe that works. I think you set strong boundaries and you know, just love the shit out of them.
So how do you know, like, how do you, individual, Eddie Ift, human being, you know, you've lived this life, you experienced all these things, you made a conscious decision that, like, you know, I'm going to get married, have a family. These are the things that I want to experience. And there's a sort of gravity in having a child. And I don't mean that in the sense of like, it's really important. I literally mean that in the sense, like, they're a black hole. Like, they suck the energy out of every other aspect of your entire existence. How do you have any, you know, practices or thought or ability to do your work and be a husband and, you know, take care of yourself? Like, how, where do you find those things? How do you prioritize those things?
That's a good question. My promoter in Australia said to me, and she's got a couple kids, I just told her at one point, I go, I feel like I'm failing at everything. She goes, you are. You have two young children and you will fail for about 5 years. She goes, everything will fall apart because you're in the formative years where you're making that child. And that's really your priority. And she's like, and then when that's over, when they, you know, you get through those years, then you can start focusing on everything else, but you got to get through those years. And so we had a 6 and we had 4 years in between. So I got, you know, 3 more years of this. So it turns into, you know, more than 5 years. I'm lucky in a number of ways because of my profession. I escape. My wife gets hammered. I escape to go on the road to go make the money. When I'm away, the hard part is I get lonely and I miss them all very much. However, I was just in Vegas all week. I slept in till 11 a.m. every day. I took every supplement I have. I went to the gym and out to Red Rocks and was like mountain biking, working out. I had a jacuzzi hot tub in my room. I was, you know, and I came back like, woohoo, I feel good. And my wife just looks at me like, I want to fucking kill you. The last thing she wants to hear is I have a good night's sleep. She would rather hear that I had sex with an AIDS ridden hooker than I had a good night's sleep. You know, we have a Nest cam and I can see what's happening at home in the kids' room. And so I'll see, like, I'll get these like notifications when there's movement and I'll just see her going from room to room all night, you know, like this kid getting in bed with this kid, going over here, getting milk for this. And I like, I don't see this till the morning when I wake up and I see them all. And I'm like, ooh, looks like a rough night. Maybe I'll go get a green juice.
Maybe I'll get a massage. Seems like Lauren had a rough night. I'm going to get a massage.
So I have that is a reprieve. Usually I'm on the road only like 2 nights a week, but last week was a full week. I have that. And I also have that my kids now are the focus of my material. So spending a lot of time with them is like work. And I've also been the kind of guy, I think I kind of live by like how you do anything is how you do everything. And so if you're going to do it right. You know, like I just got a new dog and I'm training the fuck out of it because I like having a good dog. I like when my dog doesn't jump on people and doesn't have to be on a leash and comes when you call it and can do some tricks and stuff. So it's kind of like kids. I like when kids come when you call them and don't have to be on a leash. Yeah. So I put I invest in them. Like I like taking them to skateboarding and soccer and surfing and skiing. And I want them to like I joke on stage that I had kids because I needed friends. And it's true.
That's really strong.
I ran out of friends. Like my friends all had busy lives and I was like, and I didn't want to hang out with like degenerates and like strip clubs and stuff like that or out at bars, you know? So I was like, I'll make some new friends.
And I'll literally make new friends.
Yeah. And my new friends now do all the shit that I do.
Because they don't have a choice.
Exactly. Exactly. I made the friend I always wanted.
So you're in an interesting role, an interesting position because of your work. You know, you're an entertainer, you're a comedian. You just said yourself, your material is about your kids. Are there boundaries? Are there outer bounds of like, okay, this is what our experiences together are. I'm dad. And then this is what our, you know, what's fair game for, you know, sharing or exaggerating into the comedy or whatever.
Before I had kids, I used to think, oh, you know what? I'm going to be a really honest parent. Like I'm not telling them, I'm going to tell them Santa Claus is bullshit. I'm going to talk to them about sex, drugs, rock and, you know, like I will tell them everything. They will be completely exposed and I will be an honest parent and blah, blah, blah. And I will treat them like this. And then I had children and realized like their minds can't handle that. And that there's a reason that you keep that shit from them. And so, you know, it's like my daughter loves fart jokes, loves them. And I have to be the one sitting here going, Izzy, stop. That's potty humor. That's left for the bathroom. And daddy doesn't like that. Meanwhile, I'm like, daddy loves that. You know, like, like that's my favorite thing.
You like turn around and you're like shedding a tear of joy and pride. You're like, oh, my little girl's growing up.
Yeah. And I have a bit in my act about how she got like in trouble at school because they said that, we were at the parent teacher conferences and they were like, you know, your daughter, she's great, but, and I'm like, but what? They're like, she thinks that, it's a problem. Your daughter thinks that farts are funny. And I was like, that's my girl. And I was like, what's the big deal about that? And they're like, well, it's a problem because all the other kids in class keep trying to make her laugh. So now we have like a sharding epidemic in the school. And I was like, this is amazing. My daughter caused the sharding epidemic.
You're like, go on, tell me more. Be specific. Yeah. Taking notes.
But like my daughter, obviously, you know, she's at the age now where she knows what I do. She's kind of figured it out. She wants to see it. I will not let her see it. I will not let her hear it. She calls me when I'm on stage a lot. I don't like to exploit my children. Like I felt like in the beginning, I wasn't going to ever put them on social media or anything. And then I was like, I don't care. You know, like people are going to see this shit anyways, and no one wants to see your shit. No one really cares. So I do post stuff of them. I hope to God they never get in the entertainment business. But if they insist on it, you know, I'll support them, but I don't want that. But she'll call me and she's like, Dad, can I tell a joke on stage? And she's like, let me, cause I will talk to her from the stage. And like when she was like three, she called me once and she's like, hi daddy. And I had her on speakerphone. The audience was like going crazy. And all of a sudden I hear a fart and she goes, ooh, I tooted. And the like roof went off the place. And she goes, she's on FaceTime. She goes, let me see the audience. And I was like,
oh no.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. So my wife puts Cruz to bed every night and it's about, depending on where I am in the country, I might be on stage. If I'm on the East Coast, I'm on stage at that time. And so Izzy will call me from the phone while knowing that I'm on stage. And I see the phone, I'm on stage because I record my sets and it'll stop my recording because I see a FaceTime call from my wife. And every once in a while, depending on how the show's going, I'll pick it up. And then she'll do a joke like, what did the leaf say to the tree? I'm leafing. These are like jokes. They're like jokes she makes up.
Yeah.
Classic. And she likes it, you know? And so I think it's just children naturally like what their parents do. And, but she really doesn't have an idea of, the only time when she was like two, we in Australia, I said, Lauren, we were at a festival and I said, bring her. I was in a tent doing comedy in this big like circus tent. I said, bring her in when they introduce me, just let her see me go up on stage and then take her to bed. Cause it was late. And I said, so I go on stage and I'm like, hey, you know, thanks for coming out. Hi. Hello, Australia. How are you? And all of a sudden I hear dad. And she's standing at the bottom of the stage. And I was like, and I'm like, where's my wife? And I see her all the way in the back. And Lauren's like, not doesn't have stage fright, but she's like, doesn't want the limelight. And I'm like, Lauren, get her. And she's like, oh my Lauren's God. Looking at me like this. And I'm like, no, get her right now. And Izzy just looks at me. She goes, Dad, what are you doing? And I was like, Lauren. And I go, Izzy, go to mommy right now. Go to mommy. Go. And she starts crying and runs back to Lauren and the whole crowd boos me, making my daughter cry. I haven't been on stage like 10 seconds and I'm getting booed by the audience. There's like 1,000 people in the crowd. And then some guy starts heckling me and I go, dude, do you see what I just did to my daughter? Do you know what I'll do to you?
Nice.
Like, I just made my daughter cry. But I don't know. I was extremely sheltered from bad shit. Not bad shit, because it's all the shit I do now. But I grew up Catholic and we weren't even allowed to say pee in our house. And so look at me now.
Yeah.
So my thing is, let's bring them up with a healthy amount of exposure. Because if you try to restrict them, like, I always feel like if you repress people, you end up with like Catholic priests.
Yeah, you get like the puritanical thing, and then, you know, they leave for college and then everything goes crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, my parents tried that. Like, we are Catholic. I've never heard my dad or mom curse. And it was just weird. It was creepy. And it's just, to me, it's like, my dad's all about it's class and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but at a certain point you're like weird.
So then, you know, I asked earlier about how you sort of take care of yourself, and you mentioned your work takes you away from your family in a way that kind of gives you reprieve and also gives you an opportunity to like miss them and come back. How do you take care of your relationship? Like, you know, you guys obviously succeeded enough to kick out another baby, right? So Lauren didn't hate you after your first child.
I don't know about that. the relationship definitely was really tough. I think the first year after a baby, year, really hard, really, really hard, because the lack of sleep and everything. I mean, you're just miserable, but miserable. The sleep thing. You know, I listen to all these sleep experts now and all these podcasts, and you just hear like, you need to get 9 hours. And I'm like, okay, so what happens on three? You know, like, so three were just like crackheads, right? You know, and you're living a crackhead lifestyle. And so to maintain any semblance of sanity is pretty difficult. But I feel like it got better as the year, like each year it got better and better and better. Right now we're still in the situation, like the kids go to school, which gives us a little bit of time, but it's still like hard to squeeze in a date night. And I mean, we had a babysitter. She's like, I'm $20 an hour. And after midnight, it doubles. I'm like, you're getting $40 an hour while our kids are sleeping, sit in my house and watch TV. And so you go, we're going to go out to dinner. Dinner's going to be, you know, a couple $100s. And then the babysitter is going to be another $100. It's like, oh, we want to go out. It's $300 to go out at night. It's just, you know, we don't have family. So you have to be, it's got to be a big night. And so we don't get a lot of time alone, but we do like both love our kids so much that there's a lot of like sharing, like watching the kids together, and that's like our common, it's like running a company, you know, and you're partners in the company and you love the company, and it's like, we built this is our company. So I would say the relationship's really the hardest. I think it's maybe the hardest part. Health is tough too. I mean, I've tried to just basically incorporate health into the kids' lives too, like making the kids eat healthy. And my daughter procrastinates going to bed all the time. She doesn't want to go. So I'll go, okay, you don't want to go to bed? And she's like, no. I'm like, you want to do a workout? That's the only way you can stay up. She's like, yeah, I'll do a workout. So she'll come out to the garage with me and do a workout. Like, I will put my workout together and then I'll give her like a scaled down version. I'm like, okay, let's race. And, you know, and that way I get to do my workout.
Yeah.
She does too. But Cruz will fuck the whole thing up. You know, I'll be in the middle of the workout and I'll see him spinning in the corner on the rings. And I'm like so fast that he's going to fly off and like hit something, or he's just like pulling something off the shelf or he's pushing the squat rack down and it's going to fall on his head. And so he's impossible to like, you just can't work out when he's around. It's impossible.
I was going to ask how you share your preferences, but your hobbies, you know, with your kids. Like, how do you share your hobbies with your kids? That sounds like a good solution of like, oh, health and fitness and activity, being active, having these outdoor experiences as part of your life. So like you just kind of include them into it.
So first thing I did, I got one of those backpacks that you put the kid in. And with Izzy, I just started doing lots of hikes with her on the back. And a lot of times I'd get to like the top of the mountain, I'd turn around and she's asleep, you know, but she was there for a lot of it and didn't complain. It was pretty good. And at a certain point she wants out and she starts walking the trails with me. Cruz is now at the point where he will not get in the backpack. He's on the trail and he's slow as fuck. And it kills me because I'm like, come on. I mean, I remember we just did like a couple mile hike. He's only two. And we did like 2 miles and I made him walk the whole thing.
Jesus.
And I'm any of the big hills, I carry him up, like the steep ones.
Did it put him, did that at least put him down for like a long nap or something? Or is it just infinite energy?
This kid's infinite. And we have a dog. We bought this dog called a McNabb dog. Google it. On the Wikipedia page, it says these dogs, they've hooked them up to pedometers. And when they heard they heard cattle. And they're known to do 100 miles in a day.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I've got a kid and this dog, and I don't know, I'm a glutton. But then I got this seat for my bike called a shotgun seat for my mountain bike. And it's like a little seat that goes in front of my seat. And then it's got pegs down on the, I forget what the bar is that goes down from the head gusset or whatever to the bottom bracket. But you know, the pipe that goes down on the bike,
yeah,
at bar, little posts come out. So his feet go on there and then he holds the handlebars. And this kid, like, I couldn't throw him off. Like, we could hit jumps. It's awesome. It's got a shotgun seat. So he loves mountain biking. I put him on the front of my surfboard. I'll get the big surfboard out and he sticks to it like glue and loves it. So I paddle out with him. Like, today I'm going to take him surfing. We went to do a photo, like the kids skateboard with me outside. They like to skateboard. And he's better on these things than he is walking.
That's awesome.
And they have a little dirt bike. Like Izzy has a dirt bike, like a 50, you know, like a ton. And she rides around on it. And then I started like riding it with her to like get places. And I'd start riding like the whole neighborhood. Because then I started putting him on it and then I'd take the dog for a walk. The two of us and the dog would like ride around the neighborhood and I look like an Indian family, you know, like you see there's like seven members of an Indian family.
On like a scooter. Yeah.
So that's us. And, but he was always wearing a helmet because of that. Like he'd have the helmet on and then he would get off and my wife would be like, oh, take his helmet off. I'm like, yeah, leave it on. You know, because he's going to run into something or fall off something. So he has a helmet on like half the day. And he's like, he's just gotten really like, I took him to the skateboard park for this photo shoot I was doing because he had liked the skateboard. I'm like, we'll just go. It'll be like a joke that I'm taking this 2-year-old to skateboard. And the next thing I know, he's dropping in the bowl. Like,
no way.
Well, I hold his hand. And I bring him down and then he goes up and down the sides. And he loves to skateboard, loves it. And skeet, 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 you know, and he comes out and points in the garage and I got to go get in the car and take him down to the skate park. And so they've taken up all these, like, it's honestly, like, I find if they're not doing these activities, they're a pain in the ass. So it makes me have to go do them. And I get exhausted doing them, but I'm like, all right, I'm probably like getting a bit of a workout doing running up and down a half pipe.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
And surfing with kids. It's the most sore I ever get like afterward. Cause you're like, I'm picking them up. I'm pulling them out of the water. I'm paddling with them. And it's really fun. And I'm hoping that I give them all these like skills at a young age that they just can then I'm not going to be like, you're going to be a pro surfer. You're going to be, we're going to work at this every day. I'm just going to go, hey, I gave you the basics for everything. Go have fun and see what you can do and what you enjoy.
How have you, and we're kind of come up on an hour here. How have you sort of leveled up your life and your habits and your like ability to be, you know, effective as like, you know, a comedian, a dad, a person, a husband? Like, how have you seen those things improve, or have they improved, you know, since having kids?
I think my focus towards work is a little, the work before used to be out of insecurity, out of like, I want to be famous, or I want to be this, or I want to be that. And now it's, my work is, I want to be more successful so that I can provide more for my family. So it's always, the focus is not me, me, me. It's them, them, them. I do have one place where I think I'm failing really miserably, and that is like my addiction to my phone. And, you know, where I feel like there are times when I'm on the phone that I'm not giving the kids attention. And I think monkey see, monkey do. Like, I'm on the phone, they want to be on the phone, or I'm watching something, they want to watch something. And I hate that shit. And I wish I'd be like, you know, it sounds like I'm skateboarding or surfing all the time with them, but I'm not. I wish I was more. I wish I was all the time instead of on the phone. But I, because of my job, I'm always checking, going, do I have a booking? What time do I have to do this? Blah, blah, blah. And it, you know, it really affects them. And then it trains them to be like that also. And the phones are, you know, they're like, it's like a drug, you know, the amount of dopamine it releases and everything. So I feel like that's the bad habit that I'm pushing on them, that I'm like, God, I gotta stop this, because I'm gonna turn them into like, you know, these ugly kids out there that you see that don't ever come out of their phones, that are just,
yeah, like zombies, like attached, yeah, there.
You know? Yeah. Like, we don't have a brain anymore. The phone's our brain, and it's just in our hand instead of on our head. So
yeah, that is a fear. Yeah. I find myself sometimes like, while my son is you know, sort of just like lounging around, and like either on dozing off, or he's just woken up and he started kind of looking around, like I'll interact with him, but then like I'll check my phone, or I'll be like on Twitter, or I'll look my email. And it's like, I had this moment last night where he was on his little like snuggle thing, and I was like sitting, and you know, in front of, between us was my phone. And it's, yeah, like, my phone's in focus in my hand, and my baby is like moving around a little bit out of focus. And I was like, if that doesn't tell you what the fuck is going on here, if like that visual doesn't like, you know, nail it home, I don't know what will.
I mean, we could do a 7-hour podcast on it, but, and I don't want to go there, but I think there's this, I mean, you look at what's going on with Facebook today in front of Congress, because of that whistleblower. I think we're seeing a slow implosion of social media, where it's going to come to a head at some point, where we're going to see how devastating it's been to society. And I say that, and as soon as I get off the phone, I'll go do it. Like, I'll go check stuff, and I really don't enjoy it. And I have people that work for me now that do all my stuff for me, because I really do hate it. At the same time, I love access to information. And that information comes from people posting stuff. So it's a catch 22, mm-hmm. But I really think it's bad for children. Like, we tried to keep our kids off screens for 2 years, because while their brain's developing, we were really good with Izzy. Cruz, we gave up after like a year, you know, and he became like, Paw Patrol. And it was just this, you could not get anything done. And that was our babysitter sometimes. Because mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you could put him in front of that and you could go get shit done. And you feel like a horrible parent. You feel terrible, but you're like, how am I going to make money to pay for his food if I don't let him watch that? And at the same time, you know, like, I look at people out there when it comes to all this parenting bullshit and this new age, you know, distract. When they go high, you go low. You know, that that bullshit created a lot of like millennial stuff. And yeah. I look at a lot of like, I read Kelly Slater's book. He talks about how he ate sugar his whole life and just watched cartoon, you know, and you're the greatest surfer in the whole world. And he's accomplished so much. And they might go, but he has this wrong or this wrong, whatever. He might have, you know, he's had relationship. And it's like, who fucking doesn't? You know, like nobody's perfect and nobody has it, you know. So at the end of the day, as long as they don't end up in prison or on the pole, you've done a good job.
Thank you, Eddie. I appreciate that. That's good. That's great advice. That's a good perspective. I think, yeah, I think for me, you know, the reason why I do this is because it gives me an opportunity to like talk to and learn from other dads. It also gives me an opportunity to talk to dads, I think, about things that they don't usually talk about. You might be an exception to that because, you know, your kids are part of your work in a lot of ways, but yeah, it's been good. It's been really good catching up. It's been really good learning a little bit more about your kids and your relationship and stuff. And I appreciate you sort of opening up and being a little bit of,
I don't think you probably learned anything, but I wrote 3 new bits during the show.
I took notes too. So if you need help remembering them,
I will, you know, it's so funny. It's like, this is like a live show for me. What happens to me? I do a show and in the show, I'll say like 3 or 4 things that I've never said before that are hilarious. And then I forget about them.
Yeah.
And I record all my shows now. So I go back and I'm like, oh, I can use that. Oh, I can use that. Oh, I can use that. But you recorded this, so I'll have to get those bits from you.
Yes, you will. Thanks, Eddie. Are you touring? Is there, you want to plug something? You got something? I don't know. I think this will be out in a couple of weeks.
So yeah, I'll be the La Jolla Comedy Store down in San Diego.
Cool.
That's October 22nd to 24th. Oh, wait, 22nd, 23rd, 24th. And then I go to, I believe, Reno. Am I there? Reno the next week? Oh, no, the next week's Halloween. I'll be home with the family. I take holidays off. And then I'm in Reno. I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina. Then I'm in Naples, Florida. Then I'm in Key West, Florida. Then I'm in Edmonton, Canada. And then I'm in Reno. So I am all over the place. You can see me in places.
As well you should be. Those kids are hungry. Yeah. Feed them.
Lots and lots of Magic Spoon cereal.
Use code Eddie for 10% off.
I don't know if we have a code anymore, but that stuff is so good.
I've never tried it.
Are you kidding me?
I can't do cereal, dude. I can't do cereal because if I get normal cereal, I eat it until I feel sick. And then I feel sick and then I don't ever want it again.
Okay. So how about like when it's got 20 grams of protein in it?
No, then I'm just going to eat it and then feel sick and try and justify it because I got a bunch of protein. I don't have a healthy relationship with cereal. Like I will eat an entire box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch and want to die. Not okay.
This has 20 grams of protein, I think, in a serving, something around 20. It's like 19 or something, but it's got a box of it. It's like $10. So you're like, when you eat a box of it, you're like, I just ate $10. I'm looking right now at 4 boxes of it and I'm like, which one am I gonna eat right now?
Like, hell yeah, I'm rich.
A cup is 20 grams.
That's a lot of protein because like 3.5 cups in a regular bowl.
Yeah, it is. It's like a massive amount of whey protein.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, thanks, Eddie. I appreciate it, dude.
Hey, can we talk off the air?
Absolutely. Hold on. Let me start recording.